Hello, a very good Saturday morning. You're very welcome along to the weekend edition here on Highland Radio. Coming up on today's programme, RTE weather forecaster Evelyn Cusack will be in Letterkenny with a new stage show which helps us gain a better insight into the natural forces at play with our weather. She'll join us shortly to explain. Beards are all the rage. They're now getting their own study, would you believe? Dr. Alan Withy has the details. The Lad from Lahey is a play written by Michael Harnett. He joins us on the show to discuss it, as does the play's key star and only star indeed, Gene Curran. We've live music from Jason Sweeney, who's organising a concert to raise much needed funds for the Simon community, while singer-songwriter Karen Kelly returns to the weekend edition for our live Saturday morning session. There's also Donegal's Dervla Walsh. She's taking part in the 2015 International Miss Earth pageant. All this and much more. Call us 07491 25000, or text 086 77 00 555. So lots to come up on the programme between now and 12 o'clock. Hopefully you can stay with us. Your calls, comments and requests, birthdays, weddings, etc. More than welcome on this show, of course. 086 77 00 555, 074 91 25000, or if you wish to tweet me, it's at GregHughes2. A quick look at the papers. If you're going out to buy your paper, what will greet you? The Irish Independent: banking crisis, land to solve home shortage. Not up here, it won't, but anyway, land taken over by the state during the banking crisis will be freed up to build new homes as the government seeks a solution to the country's property crisis. Hard-pressed workers, including nurses, teachers, guardians, specialists across the IT and financial sectors, are being priced out of the market in large parts of the country. As I say, that's more of a city problem as opposed to a north-west problem. Loads of pictures of sport, of course, a massive weekend of sport coming up for us. The Ireland team, or at least three of them, pictured on the front of the Irish Independent there too, ahead of their big game, the big game to kick off the World Cup. Irish Daily Mail: an insult to Karen. Karen Buckley's killer has delivered one final insult to the Irish nurse by appealing the severity of his sentence. Alexander Pactu, who bludgeoned her to death, will put her family through another ordeal in a bid to cut 3 years off his jail term. Of course, he was sentenced to life and will have to serve a minimum of 23 years. Irish Daily Star: it's another miracle. This is a Donegal story from Paddy Clancy. You heard on the news there. A group of 25 German tourists and their driver had a miraculous escape after their bus flipped into a ditch in Donegal yesterday. It came days after 50 school children also escaped with their lives when their Cork bus overturned, or their bus overturned in County Cork. And there's pictures accompanying that story there as well. The Irish Sun: Corrie in crisis. If you watch Coronation Street, this may interest you. Coronation Street is in crisis after star Simon Gregson quit for 3 months with illness and the soap's producer was axed. Simon, who's 40, is taking time out after portraying character Steve McDonald's descent into depression. Producer Stuart Blackburn was ousted days before a live episode. Corrie insider says there's been so much dissent, discontent amongst the staff. Also, the Irish Sun: it's all kicking off. Pictures of Dublin, Kerry, the Irish rugby team, Arsenal and Chelsea make up the front of their paper. Interesting final tomorrow, of course, isn't it? Dublin, Kerry. And also interesting to hear Michael Murphy on with Paddy Friel tipping Kerry to win that. What do you think? Dublin or Kerry? 086 77 00 555, or is it 074 91 25000 if you want to actually speak to us? I think perhaps many people in this part of the world would be fancying Kerry, or at least favouring Kerry, regardless what they think with their head, certainly with their heart. New Corrie boss Kate Oates is plotting to axe a host of stars in a dramatic shake-up of the struggling soap, according to the Irish Daily Mail. Flop characters face the chop as the former Emmerdale chief brings in fresh talent in a bid to arrest an alarming ratings slide. OK, that's a sample of the front of the papers. So 086, just to remind you, 086 77 00 555. Keep us busy on the text line today. Call us 074 91 25000 if you want to chat to Yvonne. We're going to be talking beards after the break. Okay, moving on in the programme. We read during the week that beards are now so fashionable that they're getting their own study, would you believe? Dr. Alan Withy, an expert in medical history at the University of Exeter, has spared the time to talk to us this morning. Doctor, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, beards, they're all over the place now, but why do we need to study them?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. They're all over the place at the moment, and it's something that people have traditionally seen as a little bit quirky, a little bit unusual. But in fact, the whole point of the project is to say, well, when we look at what beards are and what they represent, they're actually central to some very important themes in history, such as history of medicine and health and hygiene, but also sort of gender and masculinity. So they are important things.
And the resurgence in popularity affords the opportunity for this study, I presume, because you can't, you can't force people to grow beards for study necessarily. So it's an opportune time, really, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, in my defence, I've actually been working on the subject for about past 3 or 4 years, but the project actually starts now, and as you say, it's quite an opportune moment in which to launch it. But in fact, in a sense, the whole point of the project is to say, well, there have always been beard trends in history, and you know, this one we're in at the moment is actually just one of a long series of them. They've always come in and out of fashion, really.
Of course, we'll find out through any study, but the feeling is that this is about fashion this time, that people see the famous footballers, the famous film stars and what have you with a beard, and that's how the fashion picks up. But does history tell us different things about why beards were popular at any time in history?
Yeah, well, let's take it, for example, in the Tudor and Stuart times, the beard is regarded in a completely different way in medical terms to what it is now. It's regarded as a result of heat arising from a man's body, the genitals area of a man's body, to be precise, and it's seen as a sort of, it's the analogy that's drawn is it's like soot up a chimney. The heat makes its way upwards, and as it accumulates, it sort of forms strands and deposits, and what they believe in part that the beard is the result of these deposits. So you shave them off, you're getting rid of them. But it's also seen as a sign of a man's virility, his potency, is that it shows how much heat he has within him. But then if you come forward to the Georgian period, the 18th century, nobody's got beards. No men have got beards because the ideal of a man has changed completely. So it is interesting, and it's always linked to how men see themselves and how they want to be seen.
As opposed to reacting to what we may think women may like, generally.
Well, yeah, I mean, and they've always been extraordinarily divisive. I mean, the Victorians say that women sort of like beards because they are man's natural adornment. Whereas, of course, you know, again, now there's a whole different aesthetic debate going on about beards. Some women love them and they think they make men look authoritative and manly. Other women, and indeed many men,
yes,
hate the feel of them, the aesthetic, the look of them.
Mm-hmm. And I can't help but wonder, in a few years' time, will the beards that we see now, the very trimmed and shaped beards, will be like the mullets of the 80s?
Yeah, I genuinely think if we go forward 20 years or so, we'll see this as a sort of defining style of facial hair for our generation. You know, in the same way as you say, the mullets or designer stubble for the 80s or the hippie beards of the 60s. I think we're in our generation's beard trend.
So what do you think we could learn from this study, Doctor?
Well, I'm hoping to look at really the decisions behind men wanting to wear beards or to be clean-shaven. And it's the whole story of the project is something that tells us how shaving and, you know, how we conceive of the beard goes from something which is originally medical, and as we come forward in time, it becomes more a health, hygiene, cosmetic issue. So it's that sort of change over time. What's driven that change? What's made us look at the beard in different ways? So that's what I'm hoping to look at.
Interesting, and a modern perspective on it, and then we can compare that to the historical perspectives, I suppose.
Exactly, and what leaps off the page so many times is that we're no different really now to that which we always have been. The same debates are taking place now about desirability of beards and the appearance of them that have always taken place.
Do you have a beard, Doctor?
No, I did have one. It may be making a reappearance shortly, but clean-shaven at the moment.
Okay, listen, thank you so much for joining us on the programme. It's very interesting. How long will this take? You say earlier that you've already been on this a couple of years. When do you expect your findings to be published?
Well, in actual fact, I did an article on this a few years ago, and I've just been sort of looking around the peripheries. I've just started a formal 3-year project funded by the Wellcome Trust, the big medical charity. So, yeah, just embarking on it this month.
Okay, well, we wish you the very best with that. Thank you so much. Now, there is a play called The Lad from Lahey, which we're discussing now, and its writer is Michael Harnett, and he joins me on the programme. Good morning, Michael.
How are you?
Very well indeed. Michael, is this... Or Lahey in South Donegal?
This is in South Donegal, yeah.
Lovely,
this,
okay.
On the road to Pettigo, yeah.
Yeah, what's the basis of the story?
Well, basically the story is set in South Donegal, and it's during the Second World War, and it's essentially about a British airman who's stationed in Lockburn, who crosses the border, as a lot of them did at that time, because there was less rationing in the south, there was more alcohol available, there was more cigarettes available, and there was also the attraction of going to the dances in Ballyshannon and Bundoran and meeting some girls. So this guy crosses the border and he meets this girl from South Donegal, and a love story emerges, and after that she is faced with the inevitable problem of whether she continues this relationship, because it's essentially the relationship was doomed from the start. I mean, he was British, he was an airman, he was a soldier, he was passing through, and she was from South Donegal, and how could this thing continue, because she was up against all sorts of pressure from her family as to whether to go on with this or not. And essentially she's a young woman, and she's way ahead of her time in terms of age and maturity, because she makes some very, very tough decisions. And essentially, that's the story, is about how this relationship evolves, and the story and the eventual decision she makes. I won't give you the ending.
No, please don't. I was just cutting in there in case you did. It's a story, I'm sure, that has happened. Is it based on fact or your imagination?
No, well, it's fiction, essentially. Mm. But the actuality of soldiers coming across the border at that time is factual. I mean, they did come across, and I did hear a lot of stories in South Donegal, particularly around Dunkaneely and places like that, from various characters there. It told me stories about people coming across, and it is well documented that it did. And there was a kind of benign attitude by the guards at the time to people crossing over the border at the time, because, I mean, what harm are they doing, you know?
It's a one-woman show. As a writer, is it more difficult to write a play with a single character as opposed to, you know, multiple characters?
I don't know. That's a hard one to answer. I think I'm quite fortunate in the sense that in this particular story and the way the story has been told by Jean, I mean, she has brought an extraordinary sensitivity to the story, and I just saw it yesterday again for the dress rehearsal. And the difference in seeing in the dress rehearsal as opposed to seeing it a couple of weeks ago was quite phenomenal. I mean, she brings this thing a weight of emotion, which is just, it's uncanny. I found myself looking at the thing wondering, I mean, did I write this? Because it was so different than the printed page. She brought the whole thing alive. And I have to say that Kieran Quinn, who's the director, I mean, he essentially got this and wove it together and brought out aspects of this play that I certainly, in the writing of the process, hadn't seen. But he brought this to life and continues to bring it to life. I mean, they are, in a sense, a dynamic duo. There's no doubt about it. What the cocktail they've created with these words, you know.
I'm quite envious. It must be an amazing feeling to see something that you've written, put down on paper, come to life, how you described.
Yeah, well, it is, particularly when it comes to life in the way that these pair have brought it to life, and particularly Jean. I mean, I you probably know her, but...
Well, she's sitting in front of me here. We'll be talking to her very shortly, okay, Michael, so it'll be very nice.
I'm trying very hard. But no, I don't have to try, because she is. I mean, she brought to this thing... I mean, it is a privilege, and in a sense, to actually have written something and then just see it magically transformed. I mean, it's just from a printed page, which is flat and essentially sterile, to see what this woman has done to it is just amazing.
Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you. We're going to have a good chat with Jean now, but thank you for talking to us this morning.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks for
it's my pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jean Corran, some lovely words there.
I'm just overwhelmed by them. Yeah. It's just been a privilege to get this part as Aggie McCallion in The Lad from Lahey. And I suppose it's all happened in the last 3 weeks, just by accident. I was at the theatre one night and I was talking to Patricia McBride, and, you know, I have done a bit of theatre before. I did a few plays with Sean McCormick in The Green, and I did Molly Sweeney and Faith Healer, and I just love getting a nice piece of drama. So Patricia said that Kieran Quinn was looking for someone to do this part, and I texted into the Baller and auditioned for it, and I got it, and I just was overwhelmed that I did get it. And I have to say that it's a beautiful, beautiful piece. There's so much in it, and it's a big challenge. It definitely is. There's 49 pages of monologue to learn off and to act it out, but we're getting there. And there's so many different emotions in it. It's a wonderful piece.
I asked a question of Michael about writing a play for a single person. As an actor taking on a role where it's just you, you're very incredibly exposed. Did it take much consideration for you to put yourself out there like that?
Well, I suppose it's one of those things that you sort of take it on, and then when you start reading the script and you see all these characters, you think, oh my goodness, what have I got myself into? But as you read it and as you go through the rehearsals with Ciarán, there's been very intense rehearsals. Mm-hmm. We've been going from 10 o'clock in the morning to 5 in the evening for the last 3 weeks, and going home then and the lines going through your head. You know, it's a wee bit like somebody says, how do you eat an elephant? Just start off with one bite, and you start learning off bits and bits and bits, and more comes to you.
And we're not encouraging anyone to eat elephants. It's purely a metaphor.
Exactly.
It's a classic love story then, is it? You know, that's what people like that, but it's just framed with a different set of characters, this case, character.
Yeah. But there's a few characters. It starts off, without giving anything away, and I was listening to Michael there, Aggie... She's a young girl. It's set around, say, the 70s. So Aggie was 22 back in 1942, just in the middle of the Second World War. So she's about 60 now, so I'm not far off that, Greg. And
so you're going to have to put up makeup on to make yourself look older here, obviously.
Flattery. And she hears this Glenn Miller record at the start, and it takes her back to 1942.
It's a clever way, actually, to do it, isn't it?
Yes.
Because that means you can facilitate... the whole lifespan of this woman.
That's
because
right.
It's almost done in flashback.
Yes, it's flashback. That's right. And she goes back, and then there's this granny with a very colourful tongue, so there's a few F words in it. Mm-hmm. And then you have the brother Arthur, and then you have this boy Patsy who's I don't know what to make him. He's a bit of a clown, but he's a fancy for Aggie, and she does everything to avoid him. Mm. And then there is the airman, Chris, that she falls in love with. Mm. And just the whole political thing about that, you know, that, you know, a British soldier in Donegal, and just, you know, very shortly after we got independence. It's a beautiful story. There's funny bits in it. The language of the granny is so funny, even though that she may curse, it's done in a way that you just have to laugh at what
she
says.
I know what you're saying,
you know?
Yeah. So there's different shifts in emotion.
Yeah, very much so. And as Michael said, Ciarán's direction, you know, he's really put this to life, and he's directed me so much and so well and so intensely that... you know, he's just a fabulous man to work with. And indeed, all of them over in the Baller and the DCA, Andrew McNulty and JC and Katie and Sean, they're just a fabulous, welcoming group. And of course, I have to mention Jim Scully, who's the stage manager. Mm-hmm. He makes me tea and looks after me very well.
I'm from Lahey, you know.
I know that. I know it. And I was listening on the way home from rehearsals yesterday, and you were talking to...
Lee Gooch.
Just, and I said, of course, he's from Lahey.
So
right.
It's interesting. It's great to see us both putting it on the map.
Yeah.
And
the people from that area, like, you know, in Bundoran, Duncan Neely, Mount Charles, and I was told not to pronounce it Mount Charles down there. It's Mount Charles.
Not pronounce it Mount Charles.
And you could see Killybegs, and Michael has a lovely way of setting a scene. Like, there's one scene where she walks down the pier in Killybegs, and you can visualise the boats on either side, and it is a lovely, lovely piece. And we're taking it to Dublin now on Thursday for 3 nights.
I was just going to go through that. Does it matter to you where the first performances are? Would you prefer to have done it closer to home, or is it nice to do it a bit further away from Dublin, you know?
Yeah, I think it's nicer to do it a bit further from home at the beginning. And then it's like a job. If you're going to go and have a profession, it's nice to make your mistakes somewhere else and then have the big performance for the one at home.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be no mistakes. The play will premiere in Dublin at the Teachers Theatre Club September 24th, 26th, 27th. Then as part of the Donegal Bay and Bluestacks Festival, Bundoran September 29th and Duncan Ely October 2nd. And then it's back to the Baller Arts Centre on Thursday the 8th of October.
So that's changed, Chris. It's Sunday, Sunday the 4th of October now. That just didn't suit.
So which one's that? Sorry.
The Sunday the 4th of October in the Baller.
Baller. Okay, yeah. Well, that's good. You'd have been sitting there from the 2nd to the 8th wondering what to do.
Yeah.
So it's good. So that's Sunday.
Sunday the 4th.
Excellent. It's very exciting.
It is. It's really exciting and challenging and... I've just loved every minute of it, and hopefully I can deliver on the night.
Given the fact that you have so much to learn. Have you found yourself sort of taking over the character to some extent, or the character taking over you?
Sometimes, you know, even when I go home, I'd be thinking, how would Aggie feel there, or things like that. You know, it's something that you cannot leave aside. It's there at the back of your mind all the time.
Well, we wish you the very best of luck. 24th, 26th, 27th in Dublin. So if there's anyone down on those days, or indeed anyone have family down there, let them know. It's on at the Teachers Theatre Club. And then back up here, Donegal Bay and Bluestacks Festival, Bundoran, September 29th, Dunkaneely, October 2nd, and the Bala Arts Centre on Sunday the 4th. Jamie, wish you the very best of luck for it. I'm hoping to get along to one of those performances a little closer to home.
Yeah. I think you would enjoy it. It's in McIntyre's and Dunkaneely.
Excellent. Yeah, so. Okay. Very, very exciting and nerve-wracking too. My nerves are jingling for you. I don't know why. I think I tried to go on stage once and it was just such an unmitigated disaster that it stayed with me.
I'm sure not, Chris.
Jean, we wish you the very best of
luck.
Thank you so
much for taking time to talk to me.
It's my pleasure, and we wish you all the best. Evelyn Cusack, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you? I'm very interested to hear on Green On there the music of Van Morrison. I'm a Van Morrison nut.
I think we all are, aren't we? Everyone loves Van Morrison. You're going to be in on Green On Theatre very, very shortly, aren't you?
Yes, indeed. I'm looking forward to it on Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock.
That's it. Ireland's Weather, A Journey Through Time with Evelyn Cusack. What can those attending expect, Evelyn?
Well, hopefully a bit of fun. We'll have a bit of a laugh, because let's face it, the weather is funny at times, isn't it?
It's funny. It's funny, but not always funny, ha-ha. But anyway.
No, not always. What's it like there?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful, actually. Yeah. We're going to have a dry day now, according to your colleagues, so we're looking
forward to
that.
Yeah. And in fact, last night I was on television weather, and I showed, we have a webcam now at our station in Malinhead.
Oh, very good.
Donegal. So I showed that a beautiful, clear, blue, sunny sky in Donegal, and over the rest of the country it was quite cloudy yesterday. So that's another one up. We'll chalk another one up there for Donegal.
Exactly. Well, we deserve it after our 2-day summer.
Oh, stop it. Well, it was worse in Dublin, I can assure you. So the talk basically will be explaining a bit about weather, but I say journey through time. I actually start off with very early climates of Earth, because we didn't always have the same climate that we have now, and indeed, we didn't always have the same weather right around the globe. So a little bit about ancient climates and up into modern ones. So the whole thing, really.
And how do we know about ancient weather, as you described it? Is it documented?
Okay, well, I suppose it depends on how far back we want to go. Human civilization with documentation and writing really only took off in the last 10,000 years, you could say, since the end of the last ice age. The last ice age ended in Ireland around 12,000 years ago, and then that was led to the spread of agriculture, and then, you know, the rise of the Egyptians, and we started writing. So, but in fact, in more recent times, thermometers and barometers only were invented during the Italian Renaissance in the 1600s. So before 10,000 years ago, or going back even further, as you ask, it's what we call paleoclimatology, and we use sort of proxy measurements. So, for example, you know, each year a tree grows a new ring?
Yes.
So the study of that is dendrochronology. So dendro is the Greek for tree. So each year you've got a new tree ring, and the better the growing season, the bigger the tree ring. So you can sort of tell in for a little bit from
time. You can extrapolate from that to some extent.
Yeah, a little bit. But the main thing, Greg, that's the most interesting thing, is ice cores. Drilling through the ice cores. So each year, a new layer of snow or ice is laid down in the Arctic and the Antarctic. And what is ice? Ice is a mixture of air and, you know, frozen water. So the frozen water traps air bubbles. And each year you get a new layer of ice. So by drilling down through the ice in the Arctic and over Greenland, you can actually go back in time. And then scientists take these ice cores and then melt, if you like, the ice specifically for each layer. And you can actually sample what the atmosphere was like going back thousands of years. It's truly amazing. And in fact, in the Antarctic ice cores, we can go back 800,000 years to sample the actual air So it's a fascinating study. So I'll be talking a little bit about that.
Brilliant. We've an obsession with weather. And, you know, say, for instance, if we were to put five stories up on our website and one of them was weather, the interactions would far exceed any other story, regardless of its seriousness or quirkiness of it. Where does that obsession come from, do you think? Do you think it was always like that?
Yeah, well, you again, going back through ancient history, you can imagine how frightening it must have been when, you know, civilization was first beginning, you know, the first man walking on the earth. We go back about our species only about 200,000 years. It was a world of darkness, and then suddenly there might be a volcano erupting or a thunderstorm, and they were subjected to floods and droughts. And, you know, even now with our modern sophistication, we can't predict beyond about a week. Mm. And, you know, we're still subject to floods and to droughts. And, you know, we're so, inverted commas, sophisticated. You can imagine how frightening it was. So that was really the rise of the, if you like, the weather gods. And people used to pray and think that, you know, when the weather gods were unhappy and mad with mankind, that he would send these bolts of lightning. And when he was in good form, that he would give us good weather and a good harvest. So if the weather gods were angry, they tried to appease them, and maybe even by human sacrifice, which is a little gruesome, isn't it, Greg?
Exactly, yes, indeed.
So I'm glad
we've moved on to some extent. You have a very scientific approach to weather, of course, and you'd be familiar with our famous postman here who uses alternative methods. Do you see any value in that?
Well, I think Michael will agree that nature responds to current conditions, or indeed to the recent past. So animals, obviously, you know, if we're in the middle of a heat wave, they're obviously responding to that, or indeed in the middle of very cold weather. But I don't think, or I find very little evidence to know that animals or plants can predict very far in ahead. They certainly can respond in the short time and predict sort of short range. So the thing about Ireland's weather, it's so variable that the weather that hits us in, say, five days' time, if we're in the Atlantic airflow, is on the other side of the Atlantic. It's over in America. But the weather that will hit us in 7 days' time is over in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
So it's hard to see how animals could anticipate that. And beyond about 10 days, our weather that's going to hit Ireland hasn't even formed anywhere in the world yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm always on the lookout for new methods. So, I mean, let's face it, we can do it all the help we can. So,
although,
you know,
forecasts have become far more reliable, would you agree?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Going back a number of years, it was almost guesswork, it felt like, because, you know, no rain would be forecast and then it would be piddling it down. But it's much more accurate now.
Well, and it's still wrong at times, unfortunately.
Of course, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm working on television since 1988, so thankfully the forecasts have improved enormously in that time. Now, unfortunately, not due to me, but...
Now, Evelyn, in your show, in On Green on Theatre on Wednesday night at 8, Ireland's Weather, A Journey Through Time with Evelyn Cusack, do you go forward in time? Because there's so much talk about global warming, and then, you know, people will point to, you know, the last summer. I mean, is that cyclical, or is this a change in our climate that we're witnessing now?
Well, that's a great question, you know, and we actually don't know, because what we really need is lots more young people to go into climate science and to study physics and maths, because, as you say, forecasts have improved a lot. And even though meteorology has advanced so much in the last 100 years, we're still just floundering a little in the dark. Mm. So whether we don't think that sort of any individual event like last summer has had, is part of any major trend. For example, Greg, the year just gone by is the warmest on record. The summer gone by is the warmest on record globally. Yet here for Ireland and northwestern Europe, it was one of the coldest on record. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really hard to know. Ireland's weather at our latitudes is just very, very variable. So we haven't figured it out yet. So I'd love if say some students could come along, and if they've any questions, it'd be great. I'm sure, you know, our, you know, particular transition year students, I know that they have a little bit of free time this year. You know, it's not, my own daughter's just in transition year, so I know they don't really get much homework. So maybe the theatre could let them in. I'd love that, because as you were asking me, you know, I go into how old climates are formed, and, you know, the study of that is glaciology. Doesn't that sound like a great career that we hear nothing about? Would you rather be an accountant or a glaciologist? What do you think?
Well, I'm not going to offend any accountants, because
no,
I know
we need good accountants.
I know there's accountants listening, but not so many glaciologists, so
yeah, exactly.
I'll play it easy.
Yeah,
no, but I know it. I know exactly,
you know,
what, I know exactly what you're saying. Evelyn, finally, or not, we'll recap on the show. Neymar Storm Meteran's campaign was an interesting one, wasn't it? How was the, what was the reaction to that like?
Great. We've had a few thousand names come in, actually. So it was sort of just a joint operation between Meteran and the Met Office, the British Met Office. Because, you know, we don't have a hurricane season, thank God, but we do get some powerful Atlantic storms, and they were being named sort of randomly by, I think, a university in Germany, and then maybe the media, you know, the English press were picking up calling. For example, last year they called one storm the St. Jude storm, so it was just kind of maybe that we might name it ourselves. So not every storm, thankfully, in the Atlantic actually hits Ireland or Britain, but we think if they're going to, you know, because we have a 10-day forecast now, which isn't too bad, that if we can see any major storm that might hit us within 10 days, we're going to name them. So we were kind of looking for Irish names, you know, not necessarily Mary or Jim, but, you know, I was hoping for some old Irish names, maybe. I don't know, have you any good examples in Donegal? Fiacra, I have a nephew, so I've put in that as a possibility. So we'll sort of pick out some randomly between Ireland, Britain, Ireland, England, Wales and Scotland, so we should get some nice names.
Superb. Look, we can't wait to have you up on Wednesday. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, Evelyn.
Hopefully, will you be free yourself?
I'm hoping to, because I do have an interest in weather myself, and it'd be nice to see you more of your personality as well. I mean, and you do obviously express your personality, but you're somewhat restricted to in the forecast.
2 minutes, exactly. and I'd love an interaction, you know, and more a chat as well, and I'm looking forward to some great questions, because the weather in Donegal is very interesting. Really, you know, you can get really powerful storms. In fact, Donegal was hit by the only official hurricane to hit Europe. As I said, we don't normally get hurricanes at our waters, but in 1961, Donegal was hit by Hurricane Debbie. I mean, I'm sure it's before your time there, Greg, but
thankfully.
So I'll talk a little bit about that.
Well, that's very interesting. Listen, thank you so much, Evelyn. Great to chat to you. Thanks for taking the call this Saturday morning.
Oh, sorry, could I just mention that this is just the very end of AMD, Aging Macular Degeneration Disease of the Eyes. So we're just trying to promote in the over 50s, because I'm over 50 myself, to go and get your eyes tested and look after eye health, because it's something that we don't think about, actually.
Okay, we'll probably be discussing that in future programmes. Thank you so much, Evelyn.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Have a nice weekend.
You
bye
too,
bye.
Evelyn. That's Evelyn Cusack there, Deputy Head of Forecasting with Meteran. She's in On Green on Theatre, Letterkenny, on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. With her show, Ireland's Weather, A Journey Through Time with Evelyn Cusack. And the show hopes to help us gain a better insight into the natural forces at play with our weather. And it's interactive, so you can go along, ask questions. And she's encouraging students to go along as well. We are joined now in studio by Jason Sweeney. Hi, Jason.
Hello, how's it going?
I would have loved to have a wee chat with you beforehand, but it's great to have you in. Now, you're going to sing us a song in a wee while, but you're also organising an event at the Ballet Theatre in Ballybuffet. Tell us about that.
It's on the 29th of October, and it's a aid of the Simon community, Northwest Simon community, here based in Letterkenny.
And why the Simon community?
It's just a local kind of charity that I've been involved with since, well, Christmas, really. So Colette down there, Colette Ferguson, I was down meeting with her, and so we just decided that as a part of Simon Week, we were going to organise a couple of events. So I have a few, John Muldowney from Letterkenny and Maria McCormick's going to come and play with us. And then there's Sharon and Anya and Graham Sweeney and Tommy Callahan and Ali Doherty and Oshie McLean and Tommy Boner, all from kind of the Fun Valley vicinity. So,
and when's the show take place, Jason?
The 29th at 8 o'clock in the Baller.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a bit about yourself and your music. How would you describe yourself? Tough one, isn't it? Huh? I'm good. Well, what are your influences growing up? I mean, have you formed your own style, or did your parents play music in the house that perhaps influenced you? Or
yeah, well, my mother was a great singer, and my father, he plays a bit as well. So I kind of learned off them. And my auntie was a Shannos kind of singer as well, mm-hmm. so she passed away last year. So since then, I've kind of been getting really heavily into the Irish stuff and the Shannos stuff as well. So. And just growing up listening to my brothers and sisters playing and singing and all that kind of crack. So,
you're also involved with the band The Other Breed, aren't you?
Mm. So we're playing flat out to it. 10 or 12 festivals there over the summer.
Fantastic.
So we're writing an EP at the minute now to have out for Christmas. So we're just kind of taking a break to get that sorted.
So would you see yourself as a solo singer and a member of the band, or is the focus on The Other Breed at the moment?
Yeah, kind of. The acoustic stuff's always kind of been a side project, you know. With The Other Breed, we're pushing it as much as we can to go play festivals and that kind of stuff. But I love the acoustic stuff as well.
Yeah, well, the festivals is where it's at, isn't it? It's really to get your stuff out there, you know, to a wide audience.
Definitely, yeah.
Now, tell us when this show was on. Sorry, I don't remember if I asked you at the Baller.
Yeah, it's the Tuesday. So on the Monday, we're having an open mic in the Oyster Bar in Dunfanaghy.
That's this coming Monday?
No, the 28th.
All right, so that's Monday week, okay.
Then the gig in the Baller's on the Tuesday. And then we have a football match, Babofey versus Stranoiler, on Wednesday, and a quiz in Barrett's Bar on the Thursday. And then we're doing myself and Colette Ferguson, and I think there's 25 of us doing a sleep out in the Market Square there in Letterkenny on the Friday. So it should be good fun now.
That's a great opportunity to raise awareness. I think that's been going on now for a number of years. I'm not sure it's part of the official Simon Community Sleep Out, is it?
It's a part of Simon Week.
Simon Week. Because it really brings home what people have to do and have no choice to do all the time. Yeah. I mean, it's a real problem at the moment.
It is, yeah, especially in the bigger cities. But Colette's doing a lot of great work with, I think there's like 37 to 40 cases around Letterkenny and that, so she's heavily involved here. So we're getting kind of raising money for here first and then looking at the bigger picture after that. So
brilliant. Well, we wish you the very best of luck with that. That's for Monday the 28th. Have you a Facebook page or a website so people can get all the details?
Yeah, there is. It's Jason Sweeney and Friends. It's on Facebook with the event. And the list of everybody that's playing.
Fantastic. So if you're on Facebook, search Jason Sweeney and Friends and you'll get a full rundown of events from Monday the 28th. It's a good variety of stuff as well.
It is, too. It'll be a good week's crack, mate.
There'll be a bit of a few rough tackles maybe in that stroller bed. A few scores to be settled. The ref's going to have his hands full, I think.
Yeah,
are you playing in that yourself?
I'm going to play for Stranoiler. That's my side of the water. So
excellent. So what are you going to sing for us, Jason?
I'm going to sing a song that was written. My son actually named it. And we were driving one day in the car and it was raining in the sunshine, so I named it Raining in the Sunshine.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
Take it away.
Well, thanks.
When it's raining in the sunshine and when I'm feeling blue, when I think I'm down and out, that's when I think of you. You're my baby, my boy blue, and nothing in this world compares to you. When I'm driving in the moonlight, far from home, you're the one that keeps me right, and I don't feel alone. No, I ain't crazy, I have you, and you have all the love I've given you. When I'm moving on from this life and when it's time to go, know that you are everything I have ever wanted. You save me think of you. I do the best in everything you do.
Absolutely lovely. What's the son's name?
Jude.
Obviously means the world to you.
It does, yeah.
Okay, that's absolutely fantastic. Best of luck with the events from Monday the 28th. Search out Jason Swinney and Friends on Facebook. You'll get all the information. And it's for a fantastic cause too.